All right, I'm going to just say it. Do you know this isn't our 200th episode?
I don't get it.
We've released two episodes twice. We did Back to School twice.
Yeah, I know.
And we did
Planes, Trains
twice.
That's okay.
All right.
Right?
Just so long as you're cool with that. I don't.
Well, also, I mean, honestly, fuck you for waiting until right now.
I just realized it. I'm like,
well, there's your code. If you had a problem with it. We talked about this for like 4 weeks.
Welcome to our Film Fathers Podcast, the definitive podcast about fatherhood, film, and fatherhood in film. This is Jelani, and with me as always are Flock of Seagulls and Mr. Soon-to-be living the rest of his short-ass life in agonizing pain rapist, Martin and Brady.
If I'm curt with you, it's because time is a factor. I think fast, I talk fast, and I need you guys to act fast if you want to get out of this. So, pretty please, with sugar on top. Clean the fucking car.
I ain't saying it's right, but you're saying a foot massage don't mean nothing, and I'm saying it does. Now look, I've given a million ladies a million foot massages, and they all meant something. We act like they don't, but they do. And that's what's so fucking cool about them. There's a sensuous thing going on where you don't talk about it, but you know it. She knows it. Fucking Marcellus knew it. And Antoine should have fucking better known better. I mean, that's his fucking wife, man. I can't be expected to have a sense of humor about that shit. You know what I'm saying?
You fucking nailed that. That was impressive. That was real good.
This week, we celebrate a milestone here at Our Film Fathers. It's our 200th episode. In honor of this momentous occasion, we have descended once again into the Tarantino universe. This time with perhaps his most popular slash famous film, Pulp Fiction. A perfect representation of his style, with time jumps and some of his favorite actors and references to other movies. There's only one Quentin Tarantino, and he leads our bicentennial episode. If there's one question that remains after all this time, it's, what's in the briefcase?
Does it really matter?
I think that's the point of why no one can answer definitively, right?
Yeah. I don't know that I ever cared as much. I always thought it
was definitely a topic of conversation.
Oh, yeah, for sure. People still, I mean, they'll talk about it forever, I think.
Hence the...
It's a great question, but I just mean...
What's your favorite thought?
I always liked the Marcellus Wallace's soul thing, yeah. You know, which is just because of the Band-Aid. It's so prominent. You don't see his face.
It's a question that warrants an answer, in my opinion. Yeah. I've read an answer from Tarantino.
I thought
quotes.
He always said he doesn't.
Talk
about it.
So for those who don't know, the one common theory was that it's the glow and everything was supposed to be Marcellus Wiley's soul, because in that idea, if you have your soul removed, it's from the back of your neck where they prominently show a Band-Aid throughout the movie. Which is annoying, in my opinion, but just because it is so obvious that it's there with no real explanation.
Yeah.
The true story, per Tarantino, was he cut himself shaving.
Oh, no shit.
And had a Band-Aid on.
And just thought it was a cool leave-in.
Thing had it on because he was bleeding, and so then it was on, and then it was a thing. So that's the uncool actual explanation of why there's a Band-Aid there. Nothing movie-related other than he's... You know,
got well, other than other films, have you read about those? And have you ever seen Repo Man or Kiss Me Deadly? No and no, I'm pretty sure. But
Repo Man sounds... That
it's
was a
Emilio
wrestler.
Estevez and Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah.
It's a really weird cult movie that I rewatched recently for this reason. It's on Netflix or whatever, but it's from 1984. It's got a trunk that glows, and it's like a... So it's aliens and it makes people basically melt. So there's a history of the MacGuffin, right? The thing in film that everyone's going after, like from the Maltese Falcon. They want the bird, the dingus, as he calls it. So it's really just kind of that thing. And the glowing thing, it could have come from that movie or Kiss Me Deadly, which is like a film noir where it was a nuclear something that. Also, like, I think melted her face or something when she opened the case.
So my question is...
A light bulb is the answer.
Yeah,
it's a light bulb.
Right.
But if it was Marcellus's soul, why does Brett have it?
Because he stole it from him.
Yeah.
Took it out the back of his neck.
Because the soul would have been removed by the devil is the the historical or the theoretical lore.
The myth.
And hence why the pass. Oh my God. The
Marvin thing that he says.
Ezekiel? Unlocking it.
Oh.
The, 666
is the code or whatever to open the said briefcase fee.
Yeah.
Including
and he uses his
soul.
Biblical line when he kills him. I don't know if
right.
that's a thing too.
So I'm just, I'm still not.
I think it's clear. A fan theory that just took
hold.
And it's not.
And people are like, yes, that explains the Band-Aid. That'd be so awesome.
I like the part where Ringo says, like, is that what I think it is? Or you know, and then he says, like, oh, it's beautiful or whatever. Just because it adds so much to the, like, what the hell? Is it just a gold bar? You know, like, whatever. It could
right.
be. Could be that too.
Roger Avery, who co-wrote the script with Tarantino, said the original plan was to have it contain diamonds.
So much better with the glow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the glow.
With a legend being that it could have been the diamonds from Reservoir Dogs.
Okay. That's
so,
cool too.
You know, hence the Tarantino callbacks left and right. But they decided just essentially to have it never appear.
Yeah.
And leaving it to the viewer's kind of imagination. And then they added the glow. Kind of last minute, they put a light bulb in and just kind of added that aura, which I think is really what led to all of the speculation, more so. If it was just a briefcase that opened, I think it's less of a topic for people. Right. That glow changed everything.
So much better. Yeah, so much better.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it's just, if it's just diamonds, I mean, that makes it so much more dull, in my opinion. If, in case you don't know, I'd love this movie. Do you guys love this movie?
I've always really enjoyed it. I had some nits that
this time
that
or always.
I haven't seen it in a while, so I feel same. As we've said over the 200 episodes, there's just different times of your life you see movies. I think your perspective changes a little bit, and I don't think it's perfect. I'll say that.
Yeah, no, not a perfect movie, but it's just as. Like, I watched it in eighth grade. I watched it right when it came out. I was excited. This is what started, like, Martin Film Nerd. Like, watching the Academy Awards, being like, is it going to win?
I think if you
watching his
watched
speech
this in eighth
when
grade,
won.
You were already into Film Nerd.
Yeah, maybe. But, like, it was definitely, it was just one of those things where I was very excited to watch it. And when I did, I loved it.
What was it about it that made you want to watch? I just heard
the buzz around it.
The proverbial buzz
from the light bulb.
I mean, it was
Martin, that's a light bulb.
It was, it propelled Miramax into the big thing, which now is obviously
Martin's like, Weinstein. I don't know, I ride or die with Weinstein.
All day, every day.
Weinstein said it was great.
I'll never leave him.
I went back to watch Reservoir Dogs. Through the years, I have this...
Martin's like, is there a book? Can I read a book?
A pulp fiction? A pulp book? A pulp novel? I have this theory, or not theory, but just this thing that I feel like there's movies before Pulp Fiction and after Pulp Fiction. It's like the equivalent of Smells Like Teen Spirit for music. Like, there's before Smells Like Teen Spirit and after. 1991 for that, 94 for this. This just kind of led to – it changed the way movies are made. Like, the whole nonlinear time structure that confused people. I don't know how much it confused people, but I feel like probably at the time people were like, what happened? Why is he alive again?
It's still confusing people because we watched it the other day and Jen was like, wait, how is John Travolta still alive?
I mean, it's
I'll be honest. Jen, if you're listening, I got a problem with your...
I got a problem with
She that. Wasn't. She I wasn't really know. Watching. She had her phone. Yes, but again, it's been...
Still confounded.
But I remember in eighth grade being like, that wasn't confusing at all. Like, it just was awesome.
And I think that's part of it, right? Like, the being different is what made it cool and awesome, right? To eighth grade
the dialogue.
I'm saying the jumping around in times. Mm-hmm. Like, it isn't that linear structure that everyone's so used to. It's like, you got to do it this way. Right? You know, who could just splice and jump somewhere else? And I was trying to think about if I think this movie's worse if it's linear. And I don't know if it is, but I do think it adds that element of allowing. There's a lot of shit going on. And so I think it would almost feel weirdly. I think if it was in a linear structure, I think it would feel more ridiculous that, like, it kept having all these things come, happen to Vincent Vega throughout this entire movie.
Yeah.
Whereas doing it the way they did, I think in its own way made it, I don't want to say believable, but, like, it made it more palpable.
I think if it is linear, you have to focus on Vincent Vega as the main character.
Yeah.
I think because it's not, like, you can still, like, you can understand what Jules is going through. You can understand what Vincent's going through. You can understand what Butch is going through. Like, all those different stories can still play, and you can see how all of those, you know, those singular stories, while intertwined or interweaved, still play out. And otherwise, it's just be like, oh, this is the day, a day in the life of Vincent Vega.
Yeah.
And I don't think it plays it's just, as yeah, well.
If it ends with him dying, then it's...
But it wouldn't, though, right?
It would, like, end with Zed's dead.
Right, it would end with, right, Butch's it, story. Yeah, but you wouldn't have as much, like, I don't think you'd be as invested in
it wouldn't
in
have
Butch's
the wraparound story.
Story
no, from
it,
the
it wouldn't
intro.
End with him dying just because yeah, he died. No, because that's not the end of the movie.
Right, but he
in
would
any
just be...
any part of it, that's not the end of the
right,
movie.
He would just be the main character, like, throughout it, and then the main character dies, and then you're like, well, why are we following Butch?
No, wouldn't that be linearly the last thing that happens, and then you go to Butch... Oh, yeah, you're right.
And then you go to whole Butch Zed thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I think he did it well, and I think he made a better, more compelling movie by
doing
jumping
that. Yeah, definitely more
and
compelling.
And also, I never really even thought about this before, this viewing was, but it amplifies the whole Jules having the, you know, revelation that it's
exactly.
A miracle happened, and Vincent Vega just... brushes it off and he dies. You know, he doesn't think it was a miracle, so he doesn't change his life, and then so whatever fate or whatever catches up with him, and he doesn't get given the chance. Oh,
life
that
is
Jules
a hitman,
does.
But
right, his life was a hitman. I mean, yes, of course, but you just take that part that Jules is still alive, right? Presumably,
he's living in El
Paso. It might have been him.
He's like living in El Paso, working, playing music in a church,
right? Yeah, exactly.
For those that listened to our Kill Bill episode, he was going to wander the earth, and that may be where he
Cain,
ended up.
Like Cain, walked the earth.
And Jack Reacher.
But yeah, I mean...
Just can't get Reacher out of Chalani's brain.
Loves the Reacher.
I love it.
At all times.
But I was thinking about that when we talked about in Kill Bill, like, it was Cain walking the earth, and then Jules doing it, and then I think that's kind of why, like, Dad's... and myself love Reacher. It's like, because it's that whole like mantra of, hey, I'm just gonna go wherever the wind takes me, right? You know, wherever.
I was like
I'm...
MacGyver as a kid. Were you right. A MacGyver watcher?
Yeah, I love
MacGyver. We were all MacGyver fans.
Yeah. Oh, so good. He just helped people.
Right. He just go
wherever he
down
was needed.
Down. Right.
What's the Phoenix Foundation? Who gives a shit?
Is it Richard Dean Harris?
Richard Dean
Anderson.
Damn it.
You had two of three names.
I know. I felt good about it and I knew it wasn't right.
It's not as good as Jan Michael Vincent.
Yeah. Did you get him confused with Ed Harris?
No, I don't believe so.
I think there's a Richard Harris.
Well, yes. Richard
Wasn't
Harris
Dumbledore?
Was Dumbledore.
Dumbledore, yeah.
And
not
in,
Richard Dean Harris.
Not to Richard Dean Stanton.
That's Harry Dean.
Harry Dean Stanton.
I know.
There's Dean Morgan.
There is a Dean
Is that
Morgan.
His name? Isn't there
Jeffrey,
like a
Jeffrey Dean
Morgan. Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Thank you. Love Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Dean, popular middle name. Or second.
Dean Cameron.
It's a pretty good middle name. Dean.
Sure.
Should have used it. Too late.
Well, you talked about... So, Vincent Vega.
Vincent Vega.
Really think Travolta sucks so bad.
Oh, I liked him in this. And this brought his career... He was
I know,
nothing.
And I'm just... The
he
whole time,
talking.
I'm like, he just sucks. He's not good. I think he's replaceable with not even that difficult.
Probably.
Like, I don't know. It's problematic.
It reshaped... The rest of the 90s.
Yeah.
Back to my original
Him
point.
Him and
like,
Bruce Willis both. Willis is coming off flops when this happened. They said he was almost, if he had another flop, there was a lot of people that thought he probably would have maybe fallen off of, out of the A-list world and into wherever.
Yeah. Because
it would have fallen. It would have accelerated him to the end of his career where he's just making shitty movies left and right.
But yeah, I mean, it did a lot for Travolta, obviously.
They were both in Look Who's Talking.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That was the last time they both had a hit.
Did a lot for Bruce Willis. Did a lot for Samuel Jackson. Did he win?
It's the only one that he's been nominated for. But
I mean,
I would say he did a lot in the sense that he's been in almost every movie since. From
Except for two.
Tarantino, yeah. Except for a couple.
Oh, right. I thought you meant every movie because he's in a lot.
It's true.
I thought you were making a joke.
It clearly did a lot for Uma Thurman because this led to her getting Kill Bill.
I was just looking at her stuff. She'd done movies before this.
So
she looks so young. I mean, coming off of us doing Kill Bill a couple weeks ago, she's so young. And obviously with the black wig, it just like so starkly different in my opinion.
There's
she
a
looks
note.
Good in both movies.
There's a note that I think it's like out of the 56 like billed actors,
yeah,
50 of them, this is their one of their known fors on IMDb.
Oh,
I mean, it did a lot for a lot of actors, yeah. Right? Like nobody was huge in the Bruce Willis. Well, maybe Harvey Keitel. Who was the bigger name? Bruce Willis.
Keitel was. Willis was the highest paid, and they had a very low budget, and then they brought him on, and he was like, he jumped the whole budget because they had to pay him.
Yeah.
Because he was still technically somewhat bankable,
yeah.
They wanted him by name, and so it kind of worked for everybody, and it kind of brought him back.
Right.
Or, I guess, brought him back to the top of the list or whatever.
Right.
As Butch.
But yeah. We talk about Tarantino dialogue. I think this is the pinnacle.
Oh, and see, that's where I started to have some of my nits. Some of the writing, I was just, I don't know. I think in my older years here, I was unimpressed with some of the writing.
Any Vincent and Jules conversation, I'd love. Right from the beginning. You know, the whole
absolutely love the start of
Amsterdam.
Yeah, and I love the start
Royale
of
Royale with cheese, all that.
That their scene is just so calm. And you obviously don't know what's going on. So you're.
Let's get into character.
You're finally essentially watching these. Because you're coming off the diner scene.
Yeah.
And so then it jumps to these two guys in suits in a car talking very calmly about random shit.
About going to Amsterdam.
And then they're literally casually having a conversation on their way to a hit.
Right.
And so it's very. Catches you off guard to a degree, I think. And. It's great, and I agree with you, but there were a lot of lines I was just like, what the fuck is we doing? Like this, who thought this was good at one point? And I get it. It was a different time.
I mean, I from the beginning of that all the way to where they're shooting them, perfect dialogue. So that I think you're agreeing there.
Over the course of the movie.
Then I'm thinking of the Vincent Vega and Uma Thurman. Or Mia Wallace scenes like those.
There was
I didn't love it as much, but I like it a lot more.
Yeah, I thought there was some dumb commentary in there as well.
I didn't love the Eric Stoltz scenes. I mean, yeah. I get why they're there, but I just didn't love that whole character. And
yeah, I can see that part maybe being a little drag. And I remember thinking this movie isn't as. I remember we were talking about it before, and I'm like, yeah, it's only like 2 hours. And you guys are like, no, it's a long movie. It is. It's a long movie.
Two and a half.
And so.
I know it's been talked about, but like at some point, and this is, well, obviously he's done so many movies since then, but the obsession with Tarantino and like use the N word just like, it's so ridiculous. It's almost like,
yeah, I mean,
he's gone so far out of his way.
He's the low point of his acting.
He's gone so far out of his way to use, like, to have that in his movies, and I just don't. I'm sure it's been talked about ad nauseum by this point, but I just don't understand it. I don't get where or why, and also like how everyone's fine with it.
Yeah,
I don't think everyone's fine with it.
Everyone's probably not the right term.
Yeah,
but, like,
I think people have called him out about it, but it's like, yeah, but it's not necessary and 50% of the movie, like,
no,
you don't. You could have easily gotten away.
And it's
with
like, it. Well, he's like, well, at least I'll say it a lot. Like,
and he makes Jules be like almost apologetic to him, you know, about it. As
yeah,
he's saying
I just don't. It. I mean, it was jumped off the screen to me.
Yeah.
And again, seen it before, but it's just like it almost was like, really, we're going back to the well here. Like, why? For what reason?
Yeah, and he didn't need to. He definitely didn't need to cast himself in it.
I think I said that in, you know,
I mean, From Dusk Till Dawn.
In Dusk Till Dawn.
I see. I like
you
him
liked
that.
Him in that, yeah. But he's just—he's not an actor.
He's a creepy dude in that yeah. movie. And he's supposed to be in this. He's supposed to be normal.
Eric Stoltz. It was either going to be he was either going to be the drug dealer. Eric Stoltz was. Yeah. They were essentially going to. One of them was playing one of those roles.
Okay.
And I can't remember why, but he, I think.
Oh, I never heard that.
He chose. I don't know what it was. It wasn't anything monumental, but I mean, ultimately, they settled on what they did.
I felt like this was a reintroduction of Samuel Jackson.
Yeah,
but at the same time, like I'm looking back at what he did just coming up before this, and
he was in
like,
a lot of Spike Lee movies.
Well, yeah, but he was also in True Romance. He was in Fresh. He was in Jurassic Park, Menace to Society. Like he had a lot going
That's
on
true.
Before this. But I just felt like this was like his, like, hey, I'm back. I can really do some things. And people were like, oh, yeah, you can.
Yeah, well, and you look at some of those. Yes, he was in them, and I – but, like, Jurassic Park, he doesn't do a lot really in that movie.
Hold
he's
on
in
to
it.
Your butts.
Yeah, I know.
But he's not the Samuel Jackson that we know.
Yeah. Seeing
the
him
snakes
in,
on a plane, Samuel Jackson.
Seeing him in Jurassic Park, you're like, oh, Samuel Jackson's in this. That's awesome. And then you're like, yeah, he's got that line and really – but he really is just a person in a movie.
Yeah.
In a background role almost.
I think it was Jungle Fever that I remember him being kind of a big role.
I never saw
in
that.
The 80s. But again, wasn't the same, you know, wasn't the same. This definitely, you're right. It's like propelled him into a different level, and everyone wanted to write parts where he gets angry, furious anger.
And he's like, I'm in. Out.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is when he goes, changed it to Samuel L. Jackson. Because in
Sam Jackson,
he was Sam Jackson up until 92. And then I think this might have been the turning point. Once he got nominated for the Oscar, he was like, all right, we're changing it up.
I wonder if there was someone else out there. Because, I mean, that's probably, that would have been part of it. Would have been someone else, even if it was someone lesser than, who had Sam Jackson or what had credits. It's like, if I don't know how that works, but if you can't be, you know, the exact same name, that's why people change their names all the time. But
yeah, I mean, he's got, a lot of hits, a lot of misses, but he's got a lot of movies just in general. So, but yeah, his performance in this was great. I thought, you know, again, his arc and everything that you see he goes through. And then, like we said, when you cut it up the way that it's cut, it makes a lot more sense for that to be his final scene of him just walking out, right? And then just, you know, going his way and doing his thing.
Well, and you see him be, from there on, you're looking at, like, what he does after that. Obviously, Die Hard with a Vengeance was a big deal when it came on because you had that franchise coming back. Willis, again, a really big star, and Samuel L. having a huge role in that.
Yeah.
What year was that?
95. Hmm. And then
96,
A Time to Kill.
Yeah.
He has this, like, from a movie standpoint, an absolutely huge, impactful scene that really, it feels like you couldn't, literally year by year, you couldn't get away from him having a huge impact. And so, yeah, I do think he was.
Ving Rhames as well, you know. Without this movie, I don't think you have his career be as big.
You know, then I think it would have been okay with it.
without Ving Rhames in the world, without him in the Mission Impossible.
Yeah, you mean someone else could have been a Mission Impossible?
Charles S. Dutton.
I actually think I'm okay with it.
He's in People Under the Stairs, one of my favorite Wes Craven movies. That was before this, though. So he would have been stuck doing B horror movies.
Yeah, I don't know. Ving Rhames is fine. I don't. It just that it's a miss in my opinion. But
I wouldn't say it was a miss.
Yeah, it's out of sight. I love Out of Sight.
I think he did. He played the role well.
I think he played it really well.
Yeah,
I don't even disagree with you. I just don't.
I got you. I'm just saying. Again, this movie, like we're saying, propelled a lot of these actors into a different level. Tim Roth, not quite the same. I guess he was in some movies after this.
Well, and he was in Reservoir Dogs,
right? Before this.
Yeah.
Along with Keitel.
He's not, I don't think he's like, by any means, like
he had that
actor.
Fox show where he could tell if people were lying.
Is that what it was?
Lie to Me?
I was called something like that. That sounds right.
Oh, really?
And now he's in the MCU
He was in the first Planet of the Apes. Oh, yeah, he is in the MCU. Okay, so he did good for him, well for himself.
I mean, that was a long time after.
Yeah, it took a while to get there, but he got there.
Yeah, I was really repeatedly distracted by how not good I thought Travolta was. And I know a lot of people think this was good for him, but I just think he's really not good. And continually I was just like,
I remember thinking that the first time. I was like, I thought it was interesting that he picked, that he really wanted to have Travolta.
Legitimately thought it was like, oh, he just wanted him so he could dance one scene. Yeah. And then they're like, we'll just take him because we just want that part.
I liked that part more. I didn't like it when I first watched it.
Maybe
but
I'm wrong.
The song.
I just feel like somebody
else
could have twisted.
And them two dancing like that. And then they just.
I just think someone else could have done that. Maybe I'm wrong.
But I think people enjoyed the fact that he's the dancer from the 70s.
And I think it's and I think it's a huge missed opportunity to take someone who can act.
Do you like any Travolta movies, or you just don't like him? Are you a Broken Arrow guy?
Basic.
Basic. Yeah, you like basic?
We're fishing.
I mean, no, come on. He said better movies, right? What's his best?
Yeah, give me one.
I'm trying.
Phenomenon?
Phenomenon?
Yeah.
No. All right, but that's what I'm asking you. Like, are you saying you're not a Travolta fan or just in this movie?
Face Off is probably up there in terms of.
But that's
of,
more. I,
that's
are
Nicolas
we,
that's Cage.
Yeah. We're leaning more towards
Swordfish?
Cage. Wait, yeah. Do you prefer Nicolas Cage 100% over?
I think I would prefer Nicolas Cage. Not in this role, by
you
the
too,
way.
You too, Jelani?
I think so.
Nick Cage.
If I had the two of them.
Yeah. If I'm watching a movie and I got to pick between a Travolta movie and a Cage movie, I'm going Cage.
I'm going Cage for the movies.
I don't care
I don't
at
if
all.
He's a better actor.
I don't honestly. Care. Well, neither of them are that great. But
actually, yeah. I think Cage is probably a better actor.
I do too.
Yeah, probably at this point.
Always.
You guys could just make me change my mind right after I say
it. I just
it.
Don't. What's because you looked? I bet you saw.
I'm looking,
there's
and
nothing,
I got
nothing there.
I got. You're right. I got. No, I got Swordfish, Domestic Disturbance, so, Battlefield Earth.
So I didn't, and
daughter.
I don't care about Grease and
Civil
stuff
action.
That people care about. That does nothing for me.
Yeah.
Saturday Night Fever, nothing for me. I don't care that the guy could
primary
dance
colors.
To disco in the 70s.
So I do like Get Shorty. I love Get Shorty.
I haven't Chili seen
Palmer.
It in a while.
And he doesn't have Get Shorty without Pulp Fiction because it was the year after.
All right.
And he plays a cool character that's kind of Vincent Vega-ish, but it's from a.
I mean, it's pretty bad, though. Like, legit.
But that's
like,
it. That's the only other movie that I can't live without, you know?
Yeah.
It's Get Shorty and Pulp Fiction, and get rid of all the rest.
And White Man's Burden. Yeah, I mean, it's not. I just don't. I don't know. I don't see any of
Although
it.
Although Lindsay would be mad if I didn't mention Grease. She loves Grease.
Like I said, I know that people do.
Yeah.
It does literally nothing for me. I don't think it's good.
I wasn't even thinking about it. I was thinking of Saturday Night Fever when I was saying dancing.
Well, both of those were in his known for, and I was like, that. I know that that's a huge draw for people.
Yeah.
To me, that is nothing. A big nothing burger.
And he's in Carrie, Stephen King's first movie. And the only other one I'll mention is I've been meaning to watch Blowout from 1981. It's supposed to be like a good kind of Brian De Palma.
I've heard of it because I know it's a thing.
Thriller.
But
yeah, thriller. Like where he's like an audio recorder and for a movie or something and records a murder by accident. I don't know, something like that.
Sure you're not thinking of The Parallax View?
I don't know what that is.
I think it's Warren Beatty.
Who does?
A movie sound recordist accidentally records the evidence that proves that a car accident was actually a murder. That's Blowout. Maybe they remade it.
And Blowout.
Great name. Brian De Palma, pre-Mission Impossible.
Post
Carrie.
What
and
else?
Untouchables. Oh, no.
Scarface?
Pre-Untouchables. Scarface.
Yeah, that's where I was going with my brain. But yeah. Anyway, sorry. So Travolta just sucks. To me, well, I think you agree. And I.
Yeah, I just told you what I want
so,
from him. And it's only two movies.
That was a hard thing for me. Because I continually was kind of hung up on the fact that I just didn't think he was right for what he was doing. But I'll tell you, out of nowhere, it was not forgotten entirely, probably because it's a one or two line role. But did not remember Buscemi was in this movie.
No,
Buddy Holly.
It's Buddy Holly. I saw him pop up. I was like, wait a minute.
Why does he got to be pink?
There was gonna be he was apparently gonna have a bigger role. He just didn't. He was. Not available, and so I think he then available could do one day or something.
He was busy doing Fargo or something, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't think it was Fargo though, is what I read.
Fargo was 1994 though, but no. But
I think it was. I think that's why he was couldn't be in it because the producers from Fargo wouldn't let him out to go audition or film.
I was just guessing. Jelani's dropping the knowledge over here.
I read a lot on the IMDb.
On this, yeah. I didn't look up anything. I just had that one thing about Smells Like Teen Spirit. That's all I brought to the table today.
Yeah.
Stand by it.
Which is fine. And I would have to really do some serious thinking about your theory and how there are no holes in it, but
it just changed movies.
I trust
the way
you
that music was changed
wholeheartedly.
In my opinion.
It changed your life.
Yeah, I mean sure. I think people would generally agree with that statement. Like it was very influential.
Can we talk about the loose threads through this film for other Tarantino universe films?
Sure. Like, are we nitpicking or
I'm not nitpicking. I'm just
like the one I said, like Wandering Jewels.
Wandering Jewels.
I think I know one of the ones you're going with.
Subconsciously, I think the samurai sword.
Oh yeah,
in the pawn shop.
Love that. Yeah. Love that. The progression from hammer to bat to chainsaw to samurai sword.
Pretty good.
It's the right progression, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
I don't know if you bail on the chainsaw, but
it's a lot more. Chainsaw's a very good. Yeah. It's not a very
unwieldy.
Good
Yeah, for sure. But it's just also
it's so loud, and
but you can't. What are you gonna do? You can't fight it. One stray.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you might be better off with the samurai sword.
It's
mobility.
And it's what you want. I mean, he's a fighter too, so he should know how to move and use things. Not that he's, you know,
the one punch to the gimp.
The gimp
knocked him out with one hit.
Well,
can we talk about the gimp a little bit?
I mean, more than we have to.
I don't get it.
It's so unnecessary.
I still don't understand.
It's not even like they use. So theoretically, let's just say they're using the gimp, and the gimp is raping people normally, or they're usually just raping the gimp.
I don't know.
I don't know.
That's
maybe
why
we
he's
don't
locked
need to talk
up.
About it.
Because I mean, I think that's we don't need to go too deep. Well, but I do think it's that has
he's
to.
He's not
be,
trying to run away though.
Those are the two questions, right? Those are the two options, in my opinion. He's locked up in this cellar of hell because he's either
being abused or
being.
I think he's
or
the masochist. I think he likes to be abused.
Likes?
He's the M in the.
He's
in the
choosing
S&M.
To sleep in this locked up thing?
Yeah, I think so.
Interesting.
Because he wasn't trying to escape right.
He's connected. That's why he hung there. He died. He got punched and he hung himself.
No, it wasn't around his neck. That's what I was going
to
ask. Is he dead or not?
Yeah.
You think he's dead?
I do.
I didn't think he was dead. I thought he was just knocked out.
Because he went limp in his body. He wasn't standing anymore. He was literally just hanging by his neck only.
Was he tied up? Like, couldn't he unzip himself? And
No, I don't think he could unzip himself.
No? Okay. Well, he didn't even try.
He didn't put that outfit on, is what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, I think
he is very much.
I think he would have been like, hey, help me out if he wanted out of there instead of dying.
Maybe it was just institutionalized at that point.
Hey, wasn't even, I don't know, it's weird. It's such a flaw. Like, again, there's some massive gaps here, in my opinion. But so
I think he's the masochist and the submissive to Zed's dominant sadist.
Okay.
In BDSM speak.
Since we're in that area.
Sure.
Don't you think Zed would have bled out before Wallace's guys got there?
I don't think he got hit.
With the shotgun to
shotgun
the nuts?
Shotgun to the groin?
Probably not.
I mean,
I don't have a lot of experience
rest of his
with that.
Short life.
Right.
He's got to get a blowtorch and a pair of pliers
medieval on his ass.
Yeah, I don't know if the guys are showing
that's
up.
That's what I'm talking about, the dialogue. Like that stuff and Fonzie's correctamundo. It's good stuff. It's good writing in 94.
I
don't know that anyone actually talks like this, but
I think you know that nobody does.
Nobody does, but that's why it makes it good dialogue. You know, it's just like West Wing Sorkin dialogue. No one talks that fast. No one talks like that, but it's great to see
I literally talk like that.
Talk that fast, you're saying?
Fast,
not
yes.
that witty.
Educated,
though.
No.
Yeah, exactly. You know, no one has all that knowledge in their head, but like it's cool to see Samuel Jackson, you know, pull out the lines really quickly.
Pontificate.
Exactly.
And then
your question was, yeah, would Zed bleed out? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Doesn't matter.
That feels like a less of
he's
a
definitely
going to
be tortured.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It'll be
the
what do we know that guy from?
Yeah, we've seen him before.
Petey Green?
That's his name?
You could yeah, call him
Peter
anything.
Green. Well, you
Will
know
you change it to Petey?
I call him Petey. Call him Petey. He's been in a couple of things. I think
some
he's been
horror
in
horror movie or something.
I think he's been in other Tarantino films, I feel like it.
Which
but,
would check out that they again, he obviously likes people he knows and Petey Green.
I just saw him in The Mask.
Oh, he's in The Mask.
Right,
he's the bad guy in The Mask. Yep. That's what it is. And we just watched that too.
Yep. That was on the other day.
Is he?
You want his known force? You don't know the other
I'm looking
two
at him.
Or maybe you do.
Yeah, he does. Johnny knows both of those.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know the bounty hunter really. Is that
Gerard Butler?
And Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
And then Blue Streak.
With Martin Lawrence. And
yeah, Martin Lawrence.
I knew you knew
That's not a good movie, though. Martin Lawrence.
It shouldn't be one of your known force. It should.
Unless you're Martin Lawrence.
Honestly.
And Luke Wilson.
It's no Big Mama's House.
It's no Bad Boys 1, 2, 3, or 4.
That I feel confident about. You should not be one of your known for.
Such a good. Oh, man.
So he was. I'll tell you what. Petey Green.
Putting in the work.
Guys, this is a 3-movie run. Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Into the Mask. Into the Usual Suspects.
No, he had a yeah.
That's uncredited.
Right. Redfoot.
Redfoot.
Redfoot. Yeah.
I think that's where I know him from.
Yes.
I think in my brain, that's the face that I was placing. I was never going to pull it, but
he gets to work with Bryan Singer
shortly after into Under Siege 2, Dark Territory, Mercenary 1.
Kill for Mercenary 2.
Sorry, so Petey, yeah. So that I was curious. I didn't look him up obviously at the moment, but right when Zed walked in, I was like, God, I definitely know that guy.
Yeah, and then obviously I mentioned this in the Kill Bill episode, but the Fox Force 5
for sure
was slightly the inspiration for Kill Bill, and the Deadly Assassin's Crew. I think
it's not a 1-for-1.
No,
right,
but it's
who's Madsen, right?
Not the one with what was the.
No,
the one with the, sex. That was his.
Oh. Yeah.
No, wouldn't that have been, what's her face? One eye?
No,
Daryl Hannah.
Was she the leader?
She doesn't fit any of the other ones, I don't think.
Because they had Mia's character was the one that was good at knives. And that's why they said that like she was the best swordswoman.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some.
I don't know. These are loose threads.
I'm not saying.
Well, then they.
But it was great.
Another thread that I thought you were going with was the Vega connection.
Yeah,
Vic and Vincent.
Right.
So, supposedly a brother.
Right.
Brother connection between Michael Madsen and Reservoir Dogs. Yeah. And Bruce Willis. Or sorry.
He just and Travolta. He just really loves the Vega name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some loose threads there, but
I told my kids the ketchup joke. It's a good joke.
It's really not. Again,
you won't laugh.
There's a
that's what I'm worried about.
There's a problem with that being the build. The build up is to that.
You don't like that. See, I like it. I like that after she almost dies and he's like, I'm gonna go home and have a heart attack, and then he tells the joke.
Yeah, I think it was
kisses her away.
Unnecessary. I did like that I'm gonna go home and have a heart attack line. I will say that. Thought that was a good line.
Yeah, I don't know. It's because I've seen it a bunch now. Not that many times, but yeah, a few times. And I do. I enjoyed that. I enjoy every part of the movie. It's really. I don't have problems with that.
It said one of the most expensive things about the entire budget was creating the Jackrabbit Slim set. I was like, did you need to?
Like, why have the cars? We had a car.
You could have just put tables. I don't think anyone loses anything if you don't have a Chrysler's lining.
Could have just gone to a plant in Hollywood. Yeah,
right. I was just
Bruce would have let you use it.
Right. I was surprised when I saw that. I'm like, oh, I feel like you could have just. You just needed a stage. That's it.
Yeah, that's true. The $5 milkshake.
I liked that he was like, that is a pretty good milkshake. Subliminal racism.
Why? Yeah.
Amos and Andy.
Martin and Lewis.
Oh,
that's what that was.
Vanilla or chocolate?
I didn't look that up. I didn't get that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Got to dig in the crates for that one.
Is this funny, though, because $5 in 94 probably was a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
For a single milkshake? Food I am now. I don't think I'd bat an eye for paying $5 for,
are they
for
half
ice
off?
Cream and milk. That's ice cream and milk.
That's it.
Oh, they're on special today.
I mean, I guess it was 30 years ago. So
also that steak couldn't have been any good, right?
Oh
no.
Which is
I like when he's like, "Let's get out of here and go get a steak." He's like, you can get a steak here, cowboy, or whatever.
Yeah, that's not where you want to go get a steak.
Can we talk about the wolf?
Yeah,
I love the wolf.
Everyone
who doesn't
loves
love the wolf?
Wolf?
Yeah,
just the whole introduction,
the whole concept,
to him? Right?
Oh, the introduction of Ving saying, like, repeats his line and then says the wolf's on his way. Say, oh, the wolf!
That's all you had to say.
That's great. And it just so quickly builds up the hype of him who's taking a call and, like, a funeral or something.
That's what I thought too. Yeah.
I was trying to figure that out. Every time I watch it, I try to figure out what it is.
Yeah, in another room.
And like, why else wear the tux? But why wear the tux? Wedding, maybe?
It's supposed to be like 8 in the morning.
It is. It was. They were going out for breakfast.
Yeah.
That's just what he does. Yeah.
Which, on that note, it's also weird that they're eating Big Kahuna Burger over at Brett's house at 8 in the morning, too.
Yeah. Cornerstone of any good breakfast.
I was like, dude, I love a good cheeseburger, but I mean, I don't know if I'm doing it at 8, you know?
And do they make them that early?
That's a fair, to fair fast food.
Big Kahuna might. serve burgers all day.
Hawaiian burgers.
him showing up, he's like, it's 30 minutes away. I'll be there in 10.
It's great.
But the service that he provides, is it anything that couldn't have done?
You write down names, and then you know who people are when you get there.
It's like good waiter.
Cleaning the car. Other than knowing where to take the car the body. That's the main part.
But he's also just like commanding the scene.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, I'm going to tell you what to do. We're going to do it. And then we're all going to go on with our day. But yes. And then going and banging the daughter of the chop shops.
Julie Sweetie or whatever her name is.
Yeah, Julie Sweetie from SNL.
Random. Right? Random from
so weird.
Pat, right?
Yes. Yeah. An all-time character in our lives, which would be interesting right now.
Are you guys going to a volleyball game? Like, just a random line.
Very strange. But, yeah. No, you're right.
Harvey Keitel was pretty
out. Keitel's the man, and he's, again, yeah, he's got the relationship. I think that was an automatic. I think they said that role was for Keitel, and Keitel was going to play that role.
Yeah. I don't think anybody
just like a walk-in, I think, too. He probably...
Walk-ins... Okay, so walk-ins, not big, you know, short scene.
Very short,
is impactful.
Chef's kiss.
Yeah.
And then I had this uncomfortable piece of metal up my ass.
This hunk of metal. 2 years.
Now I give it to you. Oh, man.
They said there's like a hiccup there where he like pauses, he forgot his line and then like remembered it and went on, and they left it because it seemed like it kind of fit the...
Seemed better.
Yeah. And
fit
so,
the scene.
It's so weird. But you think about that. It's like, yeah, they just have Christopher Walken.
Yeah. I think I've said it before. I wish I could do a good Walken.
I've just tried like twice and none of you has bad an eye, so it must not be very good.
Exactly. Bill Hader's really good at... All kinds of
Kevin Pollak.
Oh yeah, he does. Pollock. He does really.
Pollock's
good
really good at a lot of.
Pollock,
but Bill Hader is as well. He's good at a lot of different.
Oh well, without a doubt. But Kevin Pollak, I remember hearing. I think I only really knew him from Usual Suspects, and then all of a sudden, I saw a radio interview with him, and he's like doing all these voices.
You don't
and
expect
I was,
it,
and I was like, because
he's not a comedian.
Yeah,
right?
You're just a guy on a movie.
Yeah,
a few good men.
I always thought he was. I thought he was
more
just
serious.
A serious actor, right? And then
that's what I mean.
He's not. He is more comedic and with his impressions and stuff like that, so it's very funny.
Yeah, it adds the element, right?
I wish I could say more often I'm sending the wolf or something. I probably should.
It might mean less to people right now.
Can't say it to my kids. I'd be like, what are you talking about?
Like a wolf?
Like a real one?
Yeah, I think it would be lost in translation a little bit. But you know, it's I know we briefly touched on it, but the diner scene, which obviously opens the movie, and then they come back to it, and you realize that, you know, that Vincent Vega is actually in that scene before you realize they're wearing the clothes that they're wearing and not suits, which is a nice change to kind of keep that diversion. I think you could probably put that together faster if you saw suits pass by and things, but that's another one, the calm to chaos. That same thing you kind of went with Jules and Vince Vega. They were just, like, casually talking. You don't realize it until 10 minutes later they're actually on their way to, like, a hit, and so it's like, oh my gosh. But you have these two, Tim Roth and Honey Bunny, talking in a booth just kind of casually, and you don't realize that they're literally talking about make robberies, and then they're actually talking about committing a robbery in that exact moment. And it's great. I thought that parallel there was pretty awesome, because you were watching I wrote, my note was calm to chaos, but I feel like you don't see either of them coming.
Well, they're not going to a hit. They came from a hit.
No. I'm saying when you first meet Jules and Vincent, they're in a car, which is the second scene. The first scene is them talking, and they go right into a robbery. The next scene is these two guys that turn out to be hitmen just talking in a car about bullshit. And then they go into, you know, it's like all of it is, you're following this path on both of those. Correct. When they're in the diner, they're coming from. But
yeah, just dropping off the briefcase. But yeah, no, I got you. You don't really, yeah, you don't think about it. These criminals are just going about their day.
Just living, yeah. They
switch into killer they mode or robbery mode. No, yeah.
People got to eat.
Pretty smart.
Do you think just because they were, you know, solid hitmen that they were just cool walking around with like $1,500 in cash? Because Jules had that in his wallet.
Yeah.
Vincent had that on him when he went to go buy the heroin. Yeah. The wolf had it on him. Like, they all just have wads and wads of cash on them at all times.
Yeah, I guess you got to imagine that criminals just, carry on dealing cash. They're not dealing credit cards or banks.
Have either of you done heroin?
Nope.
Can't say I have.
I felt like I haven't either, so we're clear. But
Mike is deader than dead. Heroin's back in a big way. I'm like, really?
I felt like, not a predictive line. I felt like Mia should have known the difference.
Yeah, is that why? So I've always had that question, because I don't really know.
The thing I read was I just would guess that they're a different
texture,
like looking powder.
Yeah.
But they said that's a reason any true drug user wouldn't have expected it to be heroin, is that it would have been in a balloon. If it was heroin, which he didn't have,
right,
and it turned out to be in a baggie, so there,
that's good.
That connection nice little would have maybe fooled someone into thinking it was. I just felt like someone who was doing it probably would have been like, "Oh, this is different." Yeah, a different type of powder, but
yeah, or would have even done like a quick bump just to see like if it was worth it.
Make us.
Not to make a rectangle?
not to make a square rectangle.
A rectangle.
Agreed.
I thought that too. That's a good tactical. Why wasn't it square?
You could do a better job.
You could easily made it a square.
You could have done a better job of making it a square, in my opinion.
just shoot it one more time.
When you're going for square, which shouldn't be difficult to make the sides a little closer in length. I wish you would have called out that technicality right away. That would have made me a lot happier. If you would have just like, you know what's been bothering me?
But if you're doing coke all night, back to this overdose thing, and then you do heroin through the nose, would it make you
they OD? They do different things. It's a contrast of upper and downer.
Contrast and cancel each other out?
I don't think it's an equalizer.
Okay. Clearly not. I'm sure whoever the drug,
czar,
like the drug person that was on the film had it right. They probably had done the math.
They're like, this is what happened. And it was like the heavy duty stuff, the madman of heroin or whatever.
Remember he said that's it was right. This is a madman. Give me the madman. I do like the scene when he's counting to three and they show the faces and they show Rosanna Arquette just like smiling.
She's kind of like geeked
up. She's like, what's going to happen next? At first, she's like, everyone get the fuck out of here. What are you doing? Then she's like, whoa, this is awesome.
Did you hear how Travolta trained to like be on heroin?
I did.
Because he's never done it, obviously. So,
how to like look like he's on heroin?
Yeah. So Tarantino had a friend who was a user, former user.
Yeah, like recovering.
Recovering. And he told him, basically, you want to just like get wasted on tequila and then sit in the hottest pool of water you've ever been in. So he went to like a hotel or whatever with his wife Kelly Preston, and it was like, we just have to line up shots of tequila and sit in the hot tub and just get hammered. And that's how he felt. Like,
he did have a good like woozy look to him throughout that beginning time, and then maybe it wore off towards the end, but
I was just figuring that's what he looked like. I don't know. That one stuck out to me as I felt like there was a gap there, but it is a little bit of a pick and nit.
My other nit, if we're going to pick on that scene, is why do they have a reel-to-reel tape deck when they have like the whole house like wired for intercom and all that stuff?
Because, I don't know, people like the nostalgia. People that like that shit, yeah. Mm.
Tarantino is probably like, no, put in reels.
Like, you wouldn't have, like, a CD player or vinyl? No vinyl?
I legitimately...
There are vinyl people, but there are audiophiles that like reel-to-reel, too. I don't know. It is weird. I agree. Great soundtrack. We didn't talk about the soundtrack.
I know. The
soundtrack. I love every song. It's every song and the use of it is perfect. Dick Dale in the intro, and then that Urge Overkill, Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon, and... Son of a Preacher Man.
That's just
they're real. All. They're none of them are, to me, none of them are like my favorite songs or anything, but they all are used And that's more important, I think, in soundtracks when they're used perfectly in the movie.
There was when the gimp scene, we'll call it, he wanted to use My Sharona by The Knack.
What song is playing during that?
And they couldn't because it was already being used in another movie.
Reality Bites?
Yes.
Yeah.
And...
Which very famously used in Reality
to Bites. Me, I didn't understand why. Like, why is couldn't there a limit?
Well, you can't sell it again.
You don't, and I wouldn't. If I was Quentin, I wouldn't want to take because then it's right. That was a year before this, I believe, it was 93.
Right,
or something
so it's like you're going to keep hearing it.
It's famously used in Reality Bites. You don't want to.
And
take it.
But also, someone in The Knack had become like a born again Christian, and they were like, "We want nothing to do. I don't want anything to do with the song being used in like a sexual nature." And I think that qualified. So,
yeah, that's not going to work.
But yeah, and then they said there was a cutout scene that the Elvis man line, like you should like this, you're an Elvis man or something like that. You know, she says Mia says to Vega when they're at the restaurant.
I think I've seen it.
There was a scene cut out saying they're like saying you're either a
Beatles or
Beatles or Elvis.
I think I've said it on this pod before, but yeah, I agree with that
and
too.
I hate them both. So
yeah, I know. That's what you said. Whatever it was, or maybe we talked about it offline. But yeah, I said that you're either a Beatles or an Elvis. You have to pick though, and I think I held you to it. And I can't remember what you said.
If I absolutely had to pick, I would pick the Beatles.
That's right. That's me so for sure.
I hope that's what I said the last time. But
and for me, the difference is like. The showman of Elvis, and it's like he's like a pop star versus the Beatles writing their own music and being a band, working together, having some actual depth to
my whole songs. Thing with them both is I just think they're both extremely overrated, and I totally understand, at least to an extent, what they did for music. I just don't think their music's actually that good. And,
right.
But like they had to happen for everything to come after, and so I totally they played integral pieces in like music growing and becoming what it has. I just think their music's really not that good.
Well, I think like you could do two different things. You could say like Michael Jackson or
Prince.
I don't know. I guess Prince might be a good one too. Like one well
probably not.
Or more like a band.
Yeah,
full on band. But Prince plays guitar every like
instrument.
He shreds.
Yeah,
so yeah, that's actually a pretty good one. Like, who do you prefer, Prince or Michael Jackson?
Prince.
Yeah, that would be like the Beatles and Elvis. Maybe a little bit of a more of a showing the contrast between the difference. But yeah, I think it's very clear that.
But they
Quentin is an Elvis guy,
and
too.
She mentions that. But then they also the little nugget I saw was you'll realize that Marcellus calls somebody Ringo. So
Jules.
So. The implication is that he's a Beatles man.
Oh, Marcellus calls?
No, Jules calls.
Jules, I know he calls
Pumpkin
Ringo,
or Ringo.
Jules, yeah, okay, yeah. There it is. So that would be, if you're one or the other, and you're calling someone Ringo, then that means you're on the Beatles side of things.
The Beatles side of things, yeah.
So, I mean, it's good. It was a good revisit. I enjoyed
the
film.
Really, really happy to rewatch it.
Yeah. Did you like it, Martin?
I think I liked it.
200 episodes in, guys.
I mean, who would have thought it?
It feels like a long time ago.
4 years.
Is that right?
2020.
Was.
Started.
Yeah.
So.
50 a year. Ballpark.
On average.
We really haven't missed many.
That math checks out.
Think we can get another 200?
200 more.
Have to.
Or do we call it? Call it at $3.99? Just drop it and walk away. Just fade to black. One day we're just recording and just pull the plug.
We'll just start again. Rename.
Yeah.
New pod.
I got some new pod ideas. Right. If we want to pivot.
Ooh. Maybe for episode 220.
As always, we're trying. We're trying real hard to be the shepherd. All we ask is that you try to subscribe and like and follow wherever you listen. Thanks, and save it for the pod.